Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
All right, we are here with friend of the pod, Josh Coyne, a UK NBA writer. Talk about the World Cup and the Royals' visit last week for the Celtics in our first ever peer review segment. We just tack that on anytime we need to bring in a big gun to help us understand something that maybe isn't so obvious to a typical Celtics fan, and particularly these Celtics fans. So, Josh, how you doing?
Very well, thank you. It's a pleasure to join the lab again. I didn't bring my coat, but it's great to be in the presence of NBA analysis technicians like yourself. And I'm glad I can finally bring the group chat that we're in to life.
Indeed, yeah. For those who don't know, Josh is one of the OGs of the Celtics Lab podcast from its previous incarnation when it was the Celtics Life podcast. And he is based now in London, formerly of Leicester, am I saying that right?
Leicester, yeah.
Leicester, okay. Yeah, I'm terrible at that stuff. So let's start with the Royals. I know you're a big, big fan of the Royal family. I'm kidding. How did that visit as a whole, you know, in a sentence, look from your side of the pond?
Okay, so firstly, I'm going to mention that the last time I was on the Celtics Lab, I incorrectly tipped a team to win the FIBA World Cup that hadn't actually qualified. So things can only get better. Here we go. from my side of the pond, we'll get on to my own personal feelings about the Royals in a moment. But it was sort of surreal from my end to see a group of people, you know, largely Celtics broadcasting team and parts of Celtics media that have been a staple in my life, my day-to-day life, I suppose, for years. And you find a way to basically compartmentalize parts of your life and your interests, don't you? So you sometimes think that these two things in my life are never going to meet. And one of those is the existence of archaic British culture, and the other one is the Boston Celtics. So to see all those people get so excited about it was, you know, to see them get so excited by something I'm generally pretty unmoved by was surreal. But I'm also, you know, I'm getting really used to them. Over the years, I've become really used to them attending sporting events. It's what they do. It seems to be half of their job role is to go into like the royal box of a big football match or a tennis competition, Wimbledon or something like that. So it's not something new to me, but it's so surreal to see it, you know, with Brian Scalabrine's voice in the background.
So I don't know about you, but Jaylen Brown, Joe Mazzulla, they were not impressed. Why do you think that is?
You can take it many ways. I think that Jaylen Brown is somebody who has grown skeptical of, and rightfully so, on a lot of occasions, and maybe sometimes he's hit wide of the mark, but he's extremely skeptical of any system in place to use unwarranted power. And a lot of the time that is, you know, he's talked about the way the US politicians work and ways in which his, what he would perceive to be his people, have been oppressed over the years. And I think that what comes with that is just an opposition to power and an opposition to authority, especially when unearned. Mm-hmm. I thought that Jaylen Brown's reaction was actually perfect, in my opinion, to this specific situation, largely because nobody sitting courtside should really change the way players act on a day-to-day basis. Game day, all that matters is the win, really, and that should always be the case. So I like that he said it's just another game. That should be the case, whether it's Prince William, The Weeknd, Brad Pitt, you know, whoever. When it comes to Joe Mazzulla's reaction, I thought that the sentiment was good, but I thought the way he delivered it and sort of crowbarred things, you know, it felt a little bit rehearsed.
He thought of it beforehand, yeah, totally.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit corny, but to each their own.
Yeah, for those who aren't aware of what we're referring to, he basically referred to Jesus, Joseph, and Mary as being the royal family, which I don't really think that they thought of themselves as royal either, but that is neither here nor there. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the royal family, personally?
Yeah, so we've sort of alluded to it already. I personally am not a royalist. I do have a view of it that's somewhat archaic, as I mentioned. I hope that I'm not keen on the concept of unearned wealth or status. I think that our country sometimes makes ourselves look like a bit of a theme park. And sometimes it feels as though the royal family is like our Disneyland. I'm generally not bothered by it. That being said, of all of them, the younger, you know, the sons, Will and especially Harry, have always been on the more acceptable end of the spectrum. People have a soft spot for them because of the way that the family themselves and the British media treated their mother and how that ended. And I sympathize with that. Also, they have thrown themselves into charity and environmental work, which is the exact reason Will and Kate were in Boston, I suppose, for the Earthshot campaign, yep, which I respect, of course. I'd just rather, personally, that they wouldn't exist as some sort of privileged mascots for the country.
I get the feeling sometimes from hearing them, too, that at least those two, William and Harry, kind of agree with you. At least Harry, without going off on a royal tangent, no pun intended, there doesn't seem to be too much happiness from living life in a fish tank, and I can totally see why.
Broke out of the fish tank, right?
Yeah, and from some not entirely savory reasons in terms of regarding Harry, racism with Meghan Markle, and you know, taking the typical media treatment to an entirely new and even more negative place. But I mean, for me personally, that they're using their platform in kind of like almost a Jaylen Brown sort of a way for good, I think is better than nothing. But like you, I was very confused why a city that literally had a historic event called the Tea Party to get rid of that family and then fought two wars to make it happen, that there would be so many people cheering for them. I wouldn't necessarily see anything wrong with, like, you know, some mild, you know, pattering of claps and whatever for, you know, a special guest, blah, 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 blah. But the booing was particularly noticeable as well, offsetting some of the applause. How did that make you feel?
Well, it made me feel somewhat fuzzy inside for one reason. And it's that I get it. I when it comes to football, and I know we're going to speak about football in a moment, but soccer. I'm a Liverpool football fan, and Liverpool is a left-leaning city heavily influenced by Irish immigration. And it's diverse history. And they embrace that, and they are staunchly anti-Tories. And as a byproduct of that, they're also fairly anti-royal family. In recent games that I've gone to, in fact, in Liverpool, they've been constantly chanting anti-royal and anti-establishment songs. So football really lets politics seep into the surrounding culture. So it's not something that's familiar. In fact, it feels incredibly tame that they booed the royal family to me. I guess I'm just programmed to expect much more than boos when it comes to a royal family appearance. But you obviously have millions of people in this country who are on the other end of the spectrum who sort of hero worship them. But I was okay with it. I wasn't surprised because, like you said, there's many reasons that they would deserve booze. If people were to look into the lineage and the history of the royal family and the United States of America. So yeah, unsurprising.
Definitely agree. Though after the fact, and perhaps because they won, I don't know, we'll never know, but William admitted, at least in theory, that he is a Celtics fan. How did that go over, in your opinion?
Yeah, it's interesting, is it? Do you think that he was going to be a Celtics fan, or, you know, it depended who won the game?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'd like to give more credit than that, but I don't have any reason to. So, I mean, it seemed like maybe it was just like, I'm in Boston, I should say the Boston thing.
It would be amazing. Look, how incredible would it be if we found out he had like a League Pass account and he was watching, like, he was doing exactly what I do and watching either first thing in the morning or in the early hours of the morning for the big games, which I highly doubt. Did he say it before the game?
No, he said after the game.
After, okay, after the game,
yeah. That's the only reason. Well, not the only reason, because, I mean, who doesn't do that if you are a celebrity and you're in town and you're like, yes, I like your team. Please don't hate
Curry
me.
Curry favor.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, watching this year's team, I don't get why anyone would prefer anyone else playing they're playing poetic basketball. And Tatum from courtside must have been some experience. I saw a tweet, actually, that mentioned he really will be coming away from this game thinking that Jason Tatum is prime Michael Jordan.
Yeah, that was quite the performance, to the point where I was wondering if, you know, maybe Jalen isn't so impressed by a visit from the Royals, but maybe Jason might have been. I wish someone had, you know, kind of drilled into him a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I think that he's much more open to the public relations exercise that the Celtics want their stars to be a part of, Tatum is. So I saw him coming and speaking to him and having a little chat with him at the end of the game. And I think Deuce might have as well. So big experience for Deuce.
Seriously. Now, we know that William is at least ostensibly a Celtics fan. Give me a brief synopsis on the state of NBA fandom as a whole in the UK lately, because here in Mexico, sports growing. We finally got NBA Mexico games coming back this next week. I'm very excited. I'll be there. As far as I know, there aren't any immediate plans for a return to London, but what's the state of the fandom of an average NBA player in the United Kingdom?
Right. So in terms of the presence that you touched on, they used to have NBA London games here. I attended a few of them. Fantastic events. It did feel somewhat of a carnival atmosphere where there was no real allegiance to any team, but it was a celebration of all things NBA, you know, that kind of vibe. There is an NBA store in London. There's NBA junior accounts, camps that go around the country trying to develop talent, but that really does that does cover it, really. It's an enormous question, really, because it's growing. When I was growing up, it felt like some sort of distant fantasy that you couldn't really get hold of any footage of it without having like access to VHS tapes that were largely compilations. I was lucky that my family were really into the game. It's the reason I'm a Celtics fan. But when I started writing and podcasting about basketball in the podcast Wild West that we were a part of, Justin, where not every single brand and media personality had their own successful podcast, basketball really at that point still felt like some sort of shadow secret society or cult over here. It's now on cable TV. We have a couple of prominent personalities, such as my friend Mo Moonsi, who is really gaining following and getting some serious clout internationally as a British NBA analyst. It gets played for free on YouTube over here sometimes. League Pass subscription is increasing year on year. I believe it's one of the fastest growing spectator sports in the UK, but it's still below football. Rugby, cricket, and I actually think horse racing is still ahead of it.
Really?
And tennis.
We got to work on that, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
People.
I know, incredible. It's growing though, like I said, and it's generally perceived as like a really exciting sport by most people. I don't think there's anyone who's anti-basketball over here, but it's got some ways to go before it reaches, of course, United States level, but also Australia. Lots of countries within Eastern Europe love it. You know, there's Italy, France, Spain. It's not even scratching the surface, but there's definitely room to grow, and I think there's an appetite for it now.
Very cool. So I'm going to interrupt just real quick before we talk about another sport, which you cannot bet on anymore because the World Cup. Well, actually, no, you could bet on the continuing World Cup, but you cannot bet on the United States in the World Cup, and you cannot bet on Mexico, where I am, in the World Cup.
Sorry.
It's all right. I am not the biggest footy fan, as I think you guys sometimes call it. Am I mistaken on that? Yeah.
Yep.
But if you do want to bet on the remaining World Cup or any other sport, BetOnline remains your number one source for all your sports betting. Football, bet the American kind. For basketball this season, you'll always get the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. Always your continued source for sports wagering information. BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable, including, of course, the World Cup. We are the fastest and easiest way to bet on all the NFL and NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, and even golf games. Do we call them golf games? Anyway, and other events. Head to BetOnline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use the promo code CLNS50, that's CLNS50, to receive your rewards. BetOnline, where the game starts. So, World Cup, I was so clueless. I do not understand why Mexico got eliminated because of yellow cards and all kinds of other things. And you don't need to explain that to me because I'm probably too stupid to get it in a very short amount of time. But it seems to be a pretty dominant sport in the UK. Is it the biggest sport in the United Kingdom?
Yeah, it is. It's completely. It's like most of the world, really. But I feel as though it is above average in its passion about football here in the UK. It easily makes the most money, and it seeps into the culture like nothing else, especially during a tournament like this.
Yeah, I know Grant Williams is a big fan. I imagine Dennis Schroeder, I think, was also a fan. I know Taco Fall is also a fan of the sport. You can see sometimes them tweeting about it, and I really need to like at least learn some of the more basic things. Like I get the basic mechanics of it, but when it comes to the World Cup, it's not quite the same as like say association football and that it's a national team. When you are in a situation like I am, where both I have two teams I can root for, being, you know, a resident of Mexico and resident of the United States, or original from the United States. Do you have a team you root for besides the United Kingdom?
Yeah, so internationally, I'm an England fan. I've grown up as an England fan because I've been in England the grand majority of my life. I am recently, I am officially a dual citizen. So I have an obligation to, when it's not England, support Ireland the whole way through. My club team in association football is Liverpool.
Yeah, if I had a club team, we've had this conversation before when I was like, who should I root for? Because when the Celtics were talking about the Celtics, really, Pagliuca was talking about buying Chelsea. We were like, oh, God, we don't have to go into that other than the fact that they seemed, as I understand it, to be more of a right-leaning club.
Certainly, there's an understanding of that, yeah.
Yeah, so probably Liverpool would be my club based on what I've heard from you. But, you know, in terms of sports behavior, there's all this advertising about how football brings, or soccer, not to be confusing to some of our fans who don't really understand what I'm saying, that it brings the world together. Here, when Mexico played Argentina, everything I saw in the media was quite the opposite of that. Like, how is it with World Cup in your estimation?
We've all spent more time with family lately. It can feel like old times, but your mind is on the future too, and what you can do to shape it. At Sandy Spring Bank, we work with clients to help them grow and protect their money with wealth management, trust services, and insurance, so they can enjoy today and ultimately pass along their wealth. We believe real banking is a conversation. Let's talk about your dreams. Visit sandyspringbank.com/wealth. Wealth and insurance products are not FDIC insured, not guaranteed, and may lose value.
Yeah, so football, for anyone who's listening who is exclusively a basketball fan or an American sports fan, perhaps, the major difference is the fact that American sports is very contained as a entity. Every club and every association and every country, of course, is working from a completely different place. So there is such a thing as actual completely opposite interest to the team that you're playing. It's not like you're a franchise, you build rivalries between the fans and players, but it's everything's in the interest of one entity being the NBA. It's very much not the case over here. There are genuine rivalries. I'm talking from the UK, of course, that go far beyond players and the points that you get from a match. There are massive political ties that are often put into it, sometimes religious, which is absurd. But of course, that breeds hooliganism, which has been a huge problem within British and a lot of European and South American, you know, a lot of places.
Yep.
We
have a predilection for saying a certain word here that people argue over what it really means, and I'm not going to get into it, but like, I don't like hearing it. Anyway.
Okay. Well, yeah, so it really is like a more than life situation for fans over here. Of course, there are other differences. You know, you've got it's incredible, really. I mean, it will be so aggressive and so passionate, the culture of football and fandom of football, that it will genuinely be like something from a gangster film. You know, people are meeting up to fight on the streets before the game, and often it's just pure tribalism. A lot of people don't even go to the games that fight. So they're like fighting.
Tailgating mixed martial arts.
Essentially, yeah. So versions of tailgating is essentially, you know, the police separate fans every time they go to a game. No one sits together in the same. And a lot of the time, for most fixtures, they will get escorted by the police when they're in an array at an away stadium. So that's the sort of level of like operation. It's absolutely absurd when you really think about it. But the hilarious irony is that another massive difference is that instead of sort of having five or six chants that you do to the same tune at an NBA game, you will have this endless songbook for every club. And usually it's to the tunes of like Broadway show tunes, or like classical pieces, but saying something offensive about someone's personal life. It's just absurd. But yeah, it's a culture that differs heavily from NBA fandom and American sports fandom, from what I can tell.
So another aspect of the World Cup that is not so great, and you know, to be clear, every sport has its downside. I mean, we could review many of the events of the last year or two in the NBA. The NFL pretty much speaks for itself. But with the World Cup, there were some pretty serious human rights abuses in the setting up of the World Cup, and some arguable questions about whether Qatar was, even before any of that happened, a logical place for a game like that in the first place. I think, I don't remember the name of the guy anymore, but the president of FIFA was talking about holding a World Cup event in North Korea. This doesn't really seem to be in alignment with a lot of, you know, progressive values. What are your thoughts on that aspect of the game?
It is a minefield. I would urge anyone who hasn't seen it to look up this is not pure Homerism, but look up the Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp's comments on it. He spoke quite passionately about the fact that this should have been flagged 12 years ago when they won the campaign to host the World Cup in Qatar. And now the media is sort of using it as an opportunity to try and get political statements from athletes, the footballers. I pretty much heavily and strongly believe that nobody should depend on athletes for political guidance or anything like that. Should they feel the need to use their platform to do so, I would welcome that. But depending and relying on them for that is a mistake. So that's one aspect. Stop trying to get football players to speak on behalf of the world against Qatar, because that's just really dumb. Of course, it's a place that does not treat people of the LGBTQ community in a favorable way. It's really quite a harsh society to live in if you are not heterosexual, which I do not welcome in any way and I don't support. And I do believe that if you had the choice of a country to host the World Cup, I would strongly advise against that. Obviously, I don't have any pull. But another aspect of it is that I also found out recently, if you just Google the list of people that has made homosexuality illegal, it is absolutely staggering how long that list is. Yeah. We have so far to go in terms of the way we treat gay people. It shouldn't have been held there. It shouldn't have been held in Qatar. We should have done something about it as a world football community, universe, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But that work should have been done between 12 and 8 years ago, before they were going to be profiting from it. There were huge human rights violations in getting the stadiums built. Go look up the numbers of the people who
it was
the migrant workers who died.
Yeah. It's like, how does that even happen? Like, you have to almost be doing it on purpose to be that bad at building something. Yeah.
You would have to be an absolute monster to think that one life is worth a football tournament, never mind thousands of lives. So, of course, it shouldn't have happened. But beyond the operation of creating the tournament, and now that it is happening, it's extremely difficult to sort of separate what has happened to create it and what is happening, which is essentially these athletes whose dream it is to compete in this tournament, and it comes around every 4 years. So for the grand majority, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity.
Yeah,
and they are. Soccer,
they boycott it. They'll never get it back there. I understand that too.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you really should not expect any athletes to necessarily share all of your political contexts. And that particular situation, as much as some people might get really upset about that, they have no control over it. It was going to happen, and they've worked literally for many, many years, sometimes decades, to get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, some people, you know, Ronaldo has made history recently by scoring in, I believe, 5 tournaments, which is absolutely staggering. So over a 20-year period, whatever you think of him, that is incredible. But the grand majority, I would say, of players that are in each squad will play in one tournament. And then there's a minority who play in 2 or 3 if they're absolute stalwarts for their team. But it's something that if you are someone who is in that position, is never going to turn down. But there's so many reasons in which it shouldn't have happened in Qatar.
Those are the people to get mad at. If you're going to be mad,
exactly, yeah.
Not
yeah.
them.
Yeah. and being outraged that in a country where it is illegal to do so, to be in the LGBTQ community, that people aren't making statements by wearing armbands, etc., that will get them
arrested.
In legal trouble. Yeah,
yeah.
is not that's you need to look elsewhere. You need to go out there, campaign against it. Protests, but this should have been done. Should have been done 12 to 8 years ago, and FIFA shouldn't have been able to do it.
Well, now that we have hit the most, heavy part of the entire conversation,
yeah, yeah,
let's do a U-turn and end on something a little more positive. I don't know if I gave you too many 11 people teams are kind of big compared to the five-man teams of the NBA, but
no, I'm prepared for 11.
Oh boy. All right. So tell me, who would the all-time football soccer team of Celtics alumni consist of?
Right. So disclaimer, I couldn't find a spot for, you know, one of my favorite players of all time, Paul Pierce, because it just doesn't work for me. There was no position that made sense for
the kind of guy. Yeah. Like, is there such a thing as old man game in football?
Yeah. Well, yeah, there is. Look at Zlatan Ibrahimovic, the Swedish player. He's got old man game. You know, he had some flair and amazing ability in the frame that sort of saw him play until the twilight years. So, yeah, there's plenty of guys like that. It's usually strikers or defenders who can just get by on technique and stature. Okay. And largely that's what Paul did. Also, shout out to Jordan Crawford, who for some reason is my background. I just wanted to, I was like, I've got to put a player as my background. I thought, why not the December 2013 Player of the Week?
Yeah,
anyway, goalkeeper, I'm going Bill Russell.
Definitely. I figured that was almost certainly a given.
Nobody else you'd want in front of the goal. Fierce deterrent for opposing strikers.
Size, I imagine that's helpful. You can cover more ground quicker.
Right, Jaylen Brown is my right back. In my team, the wing backs are pushing forward. It's an aggressive team. So you need a player who can do it on both sides, but generally is pretty solid. He's athletic, he's quick, and he can help at the back if needed, and he has influence going forward. So bombing down the right is Jaylen Brown. I've got Kevin Garnett at centre-back. He's a defensive anchor,
okay.
Leads from the back. A vocal presence, to say the least, and he organises the defence because there is literally no arguing with Kevin Garnett. Next to him, to create the biggest, most gigantic defensive tandem you could possibly have, I've got Robert Parrish as another centre-back. Brilliant defender, making up the largest defence of all time. Land of the Giants in there. And then I've got left-back, it's the exact same logic as Jaylen. I've got Jason Tatum. Quick, can do it on both sides. Knows what he's doing, great technique. But I would say he's probably the most overqualified left back in history. It's not a position that flair players usually play. So he's definitely overqualified there. So maybe there could be some sort of positional adjustments there eventually. I'm moving on to my midfield. Do you have any questions about my defense?
No, because if I gave you the questions I would need to give you for them to be helpful to me personally, okay, Everyone would just stop listening.
Okay, right. So CDM, so central defensive midfielder, the back of the midfield. I've got Marcus Smart. Tenacious defensive influence, but also an unbelievable passer. So he could lead from the back. He can shoot from range if needs be. He never used to be able to, really. He used to be the bane of everyone's life when he would shoot from free. But now he's a decent shooter from distance. And like I said, a defensive warrior. I've got so a lot of iconic central midfielders like Andre Pirlo. They're beautiful players, you know, but they've also got something we called shithousery over here, which I guess is like, I guess it just means you can be nasty if needs be. You know, you've got that edge. You've got a chip on your shoulder. I've got Larry Legend at the central midfield position.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Some flair, but also, you know, he could be nasty if need be. He's a fighter. He can
got you, but back it up as well.
Yeah.
Happy birthday. We're recording this on his birthday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to the legend. That's who should be in my background. Creative player, but also a defensive presence. Central attacking midfield, I have Rajon Rondo, somebody who really prided himself on helping shooters, sometimes actually to his detriment when he was padding stats.
Yeah.
But a willing passer is what you need at central attacking midfield. So there's the creative engine that we need. And then I'm going with three at the top. So I've got a right winger, not in that way. Isaiah Thomas, lightning quick, able to find space where others really couldn't.
So is there a size issue in football as well, soccer? Is that important?
Not really. No. The only positions really where you will get caught out for being small generally are the two centre-backs. And I've put Kevin Garnett and Robert Parrish there. So I think we're okay. And the goalkeeper, I suppose. But as long as you're quick and you've got great technique and attitude, it usually works out. I mean, two of the best players of all time are Lionel Messi and Diego Maradona, and they are way below 6 foot.
Yeah.
Way below. Isaiah Thomas would be towering over those guys. Yeah, he really would. Cool. So, you know, Isaiah Thomas would actually be quite a tall footballer.
Really? So the average height is considerably shorter than the NBA then?
Oh, way shorter. I used to feel very strange as a young guy because I'm 6 foot. 4.5, let's go with that. And I would feel incredibly out of place on a football pitch when I was growing up. It's definitely, the average size is much smaller. Look, he wouldn't be tall. That was an overstatement, but he wouldn't stand out as small in the slightest. And he would be incredibly muscular in comparison to most footballers. But anyway, he's lightning quick. He was able to find space and get his own shot. And that's what you need from a winger. On the other wing, before I reveal the striker, I'm going with Bob Cousy. I thought I had to get somebody else that was in before my lifetime, who was on the court before my lifetime. And from what I can tell, amazing dribbling skills, creative passer. And of course, he's a legend of the franchise, so you've got to have him in. And then finally, before anyone does switch off, I've got Ray Allen as the striker.
Okay. I was wondering if you might go with Taco Fall because he wanted to become a striker, but I didn't know necessarily if that would be the best fit considering he's so tall, that might actually not be an advantage.
Look, you and I both watched Taco Fall, and I love Taco Fall, but we watched him on a basketball court where having quick bursts of agility matter a lot more than in basketball. And I don't want to see Taco Fall trying to chase the ball.
Yeah.
Sorry,
I mean,
Taco.
He did, for those who don't know, start out with football, soccer, but
right.
he was shorter. I'll leave it at that.
I would say that he outgrew the game in many ways. But Ray Allen really is, I mean, it's really as simple as get the purest shooter that the team's ever had and put him in front of the goal.
And with his dedication to all things of preparation, I imagine that would also lend itself to that position as well.
Exactly that. And that is my Celtics 11.
Very cool. Well, I have kept you for entirely too long, but you have anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
No, man, I'm writing. I make music. I sometimes do podcasts. You can find me whilst it's still online. You can find me at Twitter on @poundcoin, @COYNE, great pun on the English sterling. And that's about it. You'll find me, you'll keep up to date, and it'll be my pleasure.
Very cool. All right, take care, y'all.